We begin with the two trouble spots in the world that have grabbed the focus of the Obama administration this year, and I don't mean Somalia, where we learned today that the U.S. has conducted airstrikes against Islamist militants. I'm talking about Vladimir Putin in Ukraine and the Islamic State in Iraq. A ceasefire plan may be in the works in Ukraine. In Minsk, Belarus, there is talk of a prisoner exchange and a Russian withdrawal. Meanwhile, tension persists in eastern Ukraine, and President Obama visits nervous NATO member Estonia on the eve of what is being called NATO's most important meeting in decades, taking place in Wales. In Iraq, the United Nations has charged that the Islamic State has carried out ethnic cleansing with acts of inhumanity on an unimaginable scale. That's quoting the United Nations there. Our first guest has experience formulating U.S. policy on Europe, Russia, and the Middle East going back to the mid-1980s. Senator Richard Lugar, former chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee from 1985 to 1987 and again from 2003 to 2007. Senator Lugar, welcome to The Takeaway.
John, great to be with you.
You know, it's great to have you here because I really want to pose some contrary questions to you. I think that you would agree, and most people would agree, that terrorism has an ability to scare everyone in the United States, but people also agree that terrorism and the threats of the Islamic State do not constitute a strategic military threat to America. What if we just ignored the Islamic State? Would that speak louder than what Obama has already said on this group in Iraq?
It certainly would. It would speak very loudly because it's apparent, given the lack of cohesion of the Iraqi government, given the problems of someone putting together some type of coalition involving other Middle Eastern nations, that the ISIS terrorists will continue to expand, and they will be an inordinate problem for not only for Iraq, but likewise for Syria. You can ask, well, how does that affect the United States? Well, ultimately, all of our allies and friends in the Middle East are going to be affected by this. It'll be an infection in each of their state situations. And this is likely to be a very bad scene, at least for us strategically.
Well, let's listen to what President Obama said after that, of course, dreadful video of James Foley, who was beheaded. Here is him talking about the Islamic State.
And no faith teaches people to massacre innocents. No just God would stand for what they did yesterday and what they do every single day. ISIL has no ideology of any value to human beings. Their ideology is bankrupt. They may claim out of expediency that they are at war with the United States or the West, but the fact is they terrorize their neighbors and offer them nothing but an endless slavery to their empty vision.
Senator Lugar, if that is the case, wouldn't ISIS or ISIL or the Islamic State simply collapse out of its own empty vision if it doesn't attract the attention of the United States? We put $1 trillion into Iraq and got the Islamic State as a result. What if we sort of dialed down the rhetoric a bit?
Well, there'll be no point in dialing down the rhetoric because, as a matter of fact, as ISIL continues, it could gain additional strength. Other very dissatisfied young people from all over the world may decide to join this situation and really create havoc. And that has potential for jeopardy of even of the Saudis, for example, and Jordan, clearly, real problems for Egypt. These are all countries that are important to the United States, as well as important to the peoples that are a part of them. And they do not want the kind of governance that ISIL brings.
But doesn't the recruiting of young people, as you've described, become more attractive the more the U.S. gets enraged by ISIS and they can make a claim that, come join us, we're fighting the White House in Washington?
No, I don't think so. I think, for the matter of fact, although ISIL has issued some statements about the United States and Washington, their objectives for the time being are much more confined. We have problems with potential terrorists with many tribes really throughout Africa and the Middle East, quite apart from ISIL. And we're just going to have to get used to having proper intelligence, drone strikes, other ways of dealing with this.
What would you say to a person who looked at the Iraq situation and said, look, the Bush administration and Colin Powell, I remember it there at the United Nations, claimed that Saddam Hussein was a strategic threat to the United States. We went over, started a war, $1 trillion later, we don't have much to show for it. What's going to be the response to an argument from the White House saying now we have to go after this threat called the Islamic State?
Well, I think for the moment, people, including perhaps the administration, are really uncertain as to how to organize and how to bring about a coalition so that we have at least some people to support, that it's not the United States battle. That will take some time. And I think the president is correct that it's very important for our military commanders, based on the very best of intelligence, of boots on the ground, that is intelligence boots, to give us some idea how we put it together.
We're talking with the senator, former Senator Richard Lugar, former chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee from 1985 to 1987 and in 2003 to 2007. Let's talk a little bit about the good old days of the Caspar Weinberger Reagan years, which I'm sure you remember very, very well. Is that all right?
Yes.
I remember the debate over the Cold War and the intermediate range missiles with the Soviet Union would have a certain tension to it, that sometimes the administration would say that Russia is a huge threat to the United States and is actually ahead of the U.S. And then sometimes Pentagon planners would come to Congress and say, no, Russia is really not a threat. We're ahead of them. Do you recall that tension? And how do you think we should use lessons from the 1980s in thinking about Vladimir Putin?
Well, I recall the tension, but I think today is a very different situation. Vladimir Putin has considerable problems of governance inside Russia. He has a country in which an economy of Russians is going downhill. Certainly, the sanctions that we have employed and Europeans have employed have pushed things a little bit worse. So that before too long, if we really were to play the sanctions game much tougher, the people in Russia are going to be very unhappy. Now, countering that has been a sense of Russian patriotism that Vladimir Putin has promoted through taking Crimea and now pushing Ukraine. I think he understands that, and for the moment he's a very popular figure on that basis. But Ukraine is pushing back. Ukraine is nearly bankrupt. They have an army that is weak because they don't have the money to pay for it and the arms and so forth. But at the same time, Putin now clearly understands that given President Obama's traveling to Estonia today and to Wales for the NATO conference, that now NATO people are taking each other very seriously. The NATO thing has come alive. The Baltic states have particularly won bases with not only Americans but other nations in Europe that are next door to Russia. And the Poles and the Romanians and the Bulgarians really have similar feelings. So Putin is excited now, a revival of NATO, and likewise much more of an interest in how logistics support can go immediately to Ukraine, not only from the United States, along with money from institutions in the banking system of Europe, so that Ukraine is going to be in a position to resist for some time. Putin has called over the weekend for statehood for these provinces in near Russia, but then some in Russia apparently said that was a mistake. He really didn't mean statehood exactly. He meant a greater degree of autonomy. And that apparently is the basis upon which the Russians are negotiating now.
Do you think during the Clinton years that the U.S. permitted NATO to expand without really considering what the limitations were going to be when Russia actually saw NATO's borders, you know, in the Baltics moving into Ukraine?
Oh, I don't think so. I believe that the thrust to watch NATO grow and to make certain that occurred has been very genuine and from the United States standpoint has been constant. Now, some have accused Europeans of having very limited defense budgets, perhaps of taking for granted 50 years of peace in Europe, first time in the millennium that such a thing had occurred. It's very possible that people do take things for granted for a while. This, once again, is a part of the problem that Putin has. He has certainly aspirations to see carving out of additional territory and even more importantly, the building of a Russian Eurasian state of considerable significance. But at the present time, it appears to me that whether NATO was sleeping or not, it awoke very quickly. And for the United States, we were never asleep. We were thinking clearly about NATO and trying to encourage our NATO partners to take part with us in Afghanistan, for example, even if we had to bring transports to cart out the troops from those countries to help us.
Well, NATO's certainly awake now. It's been great talking to you, Senator Lugar.
Thank you so much, John. Great to be with you.
Senator Richard Lugar is the former chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.